Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Gray Matters. This is Ricky.
Hi, everyone. This is Charmaine. We are so excited for another Pride Month episode. So, this month of June, we are going to be focusing on bringing episodes that are kind of centered on Pride Month and center disenfranchised and marginalized voices from the LGBTQIA community. So, this today's episode, we are featuring Roy Haidar of the Wake Up to Makeup podcast. Roy is a very close friend of mine. And so I'm very excited. He has an awesome podcast. So we will, of course, link to that so you can listen to that as well. But we are very excited to have Roy join us today. So welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. How are you guys?
We are great. Well, I'm great. Sorry, Ricky, I didn't mean to speak for you.
No, I'm doing good. Look, I submitted my final papers these semesters, so I'm feeling
Woo!
good.
Yay,
I'm
that's
feeling
awesome.
light as
Bravo.
air. I'm gonna
Yes,
Bravo. Take it.
Lots of claps.
I'm just kidding. That's
very
Congratulations.
exciting.
Thank you.
That's amazing. So yeah, we're so excited to record this, and we have so many like conversations that we wanted to have with you, Roy, and you know, we're so excited to introduce you and your work to the Gray Matters community. So we would love for you to introduce yourself, you know, whatever you want to get into your work, just so that the Gray Matters community can learn a little bit more about you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you again for having me. So I'm Roy Haidar. I am not gonna say my age because it's coming up next week, and you
That's
know,
okay. No
yeah.
Early birthday. Yes,
Thank
happy
you,
birthday.
thank you. So I'm a makeup artist. I've been doing makeup for a little over 22 years now. I'm a Lebanese descent. Immigrated to the States in 1998 to California, and I lived in LA almost all my life till 5 years ago. I moved to Texas. Moved to Houston and then moved to Dallas right after that. I still do makeup, and that's my love. I just do a lot of arts. I have started my podcast as well, called Wake Up to Makeup Podcast, and it's about lifestyle, makeup, skincare, self-love, self-care. And I just come from a very awesome family. My mom and I are best friends. We do a lot of things together. I have a great boyfriend who is an Egyptian descent, so it's very, you know, in the family kind of deal. I'm so much about culture. I love cultures. I love to learn about different cultures, and I try to be as positive as I can, especially nowadays, you know, with the pandemic and what's happening around the world. So, and I stay away from the news. So this is a little bit about me, you know.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. I totally get it. I think the pandemic is such like a over. We talked about this in just our previous episode with who you know, Adrian. So it's like the pandemic is a conversation. It's like something that just overlooms all of our lives, and it becomes such like an intrinsic part of our conversation, especially when we talk about the beauty and cosmetics industry. And you know, we were talking with Adrian about his drag activism and his drag work, and it's like it's just massively impacted so many industries, but particularly those in marginalized and female-centered worker industries like the beauty industry, and then industries where you are, it's service, right? So it's like service-based, so hair, beauty, skin, it's like really been massively affected
Absolutely.
by the pandemic. So
Absolutely. So like touching people, I'm so used to doing makeup, obviously, right? So
yeah.
not touching a person for a whole year, a little over a year, has been very challenging. That's why actually I came out with my podcast, because you know, I just wanted to really talk about self-care and self-love, and what can we do differently to change it, and can I, you know, go through it without going crazy? Because I'm sure a lot of us feel the same way
Yeah.
nowadays.
Yep.
Just wearing a mask, something new that we have not done before. You know, it's all these new things that we're learning, and trying to deal with people now a little differently has been very challenging for all of us, I'm sure, you know, especially for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so true. And yeah, I think it's the podcast is I really enjoy listening to your podcast, and I encourage our Gray Matters community to do it as well, because you do talk about like a plethora of issues, and you're absolutely right. I think being in a service industry and not having that like intimate experience with people for that long, especially when you are such a social person and you're used to being around people, or even if you're not a social person, we have a lot of like introverted people that work within the beauty industry. But yeah, it's really forced us to kind of reckon with who we are as people and individuals. And it's also forced us, which is a positive, because I like your positive take on things, like forced mm-hmm. us to explore different avenues and different Absolutely. Ways and different ways of being creative.
Yep. So, you know, we all have five love languages, right? And one of my five languages. One of my five languages is definitely touching. And mm-hmm. that, yeah,
my
right?
Number one.
Mine too. So with that coming out of that whole situation has been very challenging. So I have to kind of veer off to another love language, which is giving, and or, you know, any other ways to kind of really replace that for now till I find it coming back, you know?
Yeah.
So that's been challenging too, you know, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, when you were talking about touch, I was just going to say that I'm a weird touch because I'm an introvert mm-hmm. too. So I'm like, only touch me if I want you to touch me.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Or if I like, yep. I don't know, trust in touching, but definitely, especially like now that you have to kind of like alter like your different, I don't know, just how you function in society as a whole. It's like a complete realalignment.
Totally.
Yeah.
Defining everything, all the re's. I love seeing re everything.
Yeah. Like I feel you have to re-energize the other mm-hmm. things that you haven't really used mm-hmm. in order to replace what you cannot do at the moment, you know?
Yeah.
Which is actually, you know, thinking about it now, it's at first, you know, we all think of negatives right away, right? But thinking about it now, we don't have a choice, unless if you want to live in that negativity the rest of your life, that's fine. That's up to you. But you have to change it into something positive. Otherwise, really gonna go crazy, you know?
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so true. That is so true. And it's like I think too with industries like the beauty industry, it's so fast paced and it's so go, go, go. And then I know for so many of us, we were like working so much and doing other things and trying to balance. And this like last year and so has like really forced us to reckon with our own lives and like which direction we're taking it. In a way, it's been wonderful because mm-hmm. like I've had time to do things that I wouldn't have had time to mm-hmm. do. I mean, I've also been much busier, which is very good because I've been busier mm-hmm. in a different way, but I've had time to do different things that I wanted to explore in different avenues. And we also launched our podcast. I know Ricky and I have been working on it we've been working on Grey Matters, like the website and the podcast, for almost 2 years. And then we launched it last year because we were planning on launching in the fall. Mm-hmm. And then we got this amazing opportunity. And so we're like, let's push everything up. And we were ready. And so we're like, let's do it. Let's launch it. And it was this really strange, but I would say like wonderful experience of launching it during pandemic times. And really,
absolutely.
I mean, it forced us to learn so many different things too.
Of course. And it's given you an extra thing that you didn't have before. Same as myself, you know, and I've gotten to be even closer with my family, closer with my friends, because we got to, you know, connect even more because we had a little bit more time to mm-hmm. connect. You know, work has been very stressful during the pandemic, of course. You know, I'm sure everybody's would say the same thing, because again, you know, I'm not the computer person where I sit on my computer and just work. I'm actually out there socializing, doing makeup, you know, talking to people and stuff. So that was a lesson that I had to learn. And it's like an experience. It's a whole different experience that I had to kind of just get used to. And it's gotten me really, it strengthened my ability to really kind of work on my computer now versus just doing, you know, so I have a little bit of both. I got experience in a little bit of both at this point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think it's so interesting. And I love talking to you because we have so many different conversations that we can have. And I'm so glad I can bring in like Ricky and the Grey Matters community to this conversation. And one of the things I think that I'm going to shift just a little bit, but I think one of the things that we really wanted to think about during this, like during kind of Pride Month and during these episodes and like having these conversations, is looking at like what identity is, what identity means. And then also looking at the LGBTQIA communities and the activism within those communities. And I often, and you can correct me because have heard both, and I often use both, like LGBTQIA community versus communities, or not versus, but and communities, because I think that they are various communities within like a larger kind of umbrella. And I hear this conversation a lot, not that it's the same thing at all, but within like BIPOC communities as well, where it's like we have individual communities, and then we, when we talk about them in a collective format, we kind of say BIPOC. And so just for anybody that's listening and they're wondering why I'm kind of using them interchangeably, I'm recognizing the distinctions and kind of the nuances within that as well. But I think it is important to talk about that and the history behind those communities. And we talk a lot about activism and solidarity and allyship. And so it's like looking at the history of that and where, like how that's gotten us to where we are. And of course, I think that that is kind of related to the pandemic and the way that we perform our allyship and perform our solidarity. And just to kind of explore what it took for us to get to a place where we can now celebrate Pride Month.
I totally agree. And, you know, when we celebrate Pride Month, it's not about going down on the street and drinking and, you know, just having a party. It's more of a appreciating, as you mentioned, history, appreciating all what people have done to us, all the great grandfathers and great grandmothers, you know, what they have done to us to get us to where we are right now. Mm-hmm. And if you notice, you know, before it was the LGBT community. Now it's gotten so much more acronyms. I don't even know it yet, but I'm still learning about it. However, the reason why it's always been there. Now, mm-hmm. the reason why it's expanding, because now people have more, it's getting more open, and we're understanding more where people come from. Before, when you have a transgender person that is transgender, you will never know, because that person was too afraid to be themselves, mm-hmm. or to be who he is or she is, you know. But now we are in this, I would say, a culture or a world that we are more trying to understand what it is. And that's why it's been added to our, you know, LGBTQ communities. And I love that. But I always want to remind those people that, and me, for, you know, to always appreciate what the others have done to us to where we are right now. They fought for us where we are right now, you know, mm-hmm. and that on its own is a celebration. You know, it's just like to appreciate that community and to really respect those who really did fight for us to where we are.
Yeah. I love this conversation. I think it's so important. I'm going to try so hard not to go on my little tangent like I always do about commodification, but I feel like in order to participate in the decommodification of Pride Month, right, where it's not just, I'm not saying you can't buy your rainbow shirt. If you want that rainbow shirt, go get it. If you want that rainbow flag, do some research where you buy it from, make sure it's not being exploited, whatever. Yep. But even if that case, you see it in Target, go ahead. But I'm saying, but I feel like to, like we like to say here on Gray Matters, to activate your activism one step further, that time for reflection is so important, and reflection in the sense of learning about the history, even if you're not within the LGBTQIA plus communities, taking time to learn the history. And that could be from social media. There's so many social media accounts, right? It could be from taking out a book, even visiting our resources page, which we will list all the books, all the articles, everything that you could read, write, or listen to. But I think it's so important to kind of step outside of that party narrative or that
everybody. That little box.
Yes. Yep.
That little box that you live in.
Yes. That even that little box that defines Pride Month, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
As a certain thing, it's important to step outside of that and take it a step further and really ground yourself in your activism, so that it's not just performative, right? So it's not just, okay, look at me taking a picture at Pride Parade.
It's celebrating humans. It's just celebrating human beings. We're all, at the end of the day, human beings, whatever color, gender, whatever it is, we breathe the same air, mm-hmm. we eat the same food, we live all in communities, and we need to all respect one another, straight, mm-hmm. gay, bi, whatever you are. It's just, that's your life, and you do whatever you want with it, and, you know, and it's really upsetting to me when somebody has such a hateful personality who would come against any of these people, because it's not their fault. It's not our fault. I wasn't born and I decided to be gay one day. You know, it was something that I actually lived with, and I was 5 years old and I knew I was different. I didn't know what gay was, but I was growing up really, you know, different. And I tried to change myself to be what they say normal. And there's being normal is being yourself, not being anybody else. Mm-hmm. So that was such a hard thing for me to do growing up, especially I come from a Middle Eastern family and we're very Christian. And, you know, so it was a challenge for me. But again, thankfully, I have a great family who is supportive now, because they opened up their mind on, you know, seeing people talking about me, how much they love me. And to my mom, for example, and she's like, if people love him so much, why am I going against who he is as a person? So she pretty much opened her mind and she's like, wow, I love you the way you are. You're my son at the end of the day, you know? So if we all love each other as a community, we would live in such a beautiful world with no hate, with no, you know, mm-hmm. just no evil, period, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's such a beautiful message. And thank you for sharing your own story with us. Like, I think that it's often, how do I say this? Like, I have a few thoughts about this. I think it's often like, downplayed, like the way that we talk about identity and the way that we talk about people's experiences, especially within, and I'm pausing because I'm thinking about this in my own context, like within the US, right? And like how we talk about different people's identities and their coming out story. And I've heard different things about how coming out culture can be like really problematic for some young gay people. It can, like, there's like a culture of fear and like, you know, this like be your true self with it. And I think that I may be getting a little bit like, okay, I promise I'm going to bring this back. But I was just thinking about this as you were speaking, because it's like what you were saying, like you knew your identity. And I think it's mm-hmm. so beautiful that your family, and especially your mom, who like, it's so heartwarming to hear about like your relationship with her, where it's like, you know, she was like, this is my son. And this is, you know, this person that I love. And if I love them, I love them fully as they are. And I think that's part of this like larger conversation that it kind of gets lost in this larger conversation. Cause it's very much like, you know, you have to believe what I believe because my version of love is like stipulated upon like this version of you that I hold in right. my.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like we are programmed as human beings to grow up, get married, have kids, have an education. And it's like, basically you have to do this. If you don't, or if you're not educated, or if you're not married at a certain age, they look down on you. It's like, oh, what's wrong with mm-hmm. this person?
Yeah.
A or not. I'm just saying as a general, you know, thing. And it's like, why do I need to live off of somebody else's expectation if I'm not happy with that expectation? If you are, that's great, you do your thing, whatever, but I'm definitely not. I have way more dreams, way more ambition besides that little thing that they engraved in my mind when I was a kid, you know, or all of us, you know, to do. Like, I don't need to get married at a certain age. I don't need to have kids if I don't want kids, you know. Just live my life the way I want to and not hurt anybody and not be, you know, anybody else's business, and I'm good.
It's like socialized expectations that are very yeah. much rooted in hegemonic heteronormative culture. 100%. And it's very much rooted in like this continuation of the nuclear family. That's why often yeah. like multi-generational households, which are very like predominant across the Middle East and various parts of the world, and they're very, very valued. And I think uh-huh. that's the other thing too, with like community, with like, and I don't think this is just exclusive to like BIPOC communities and like communities across the world. But it's like this value of community. And I read this mm-hmm. really interesting thing recently and I kind of like skimmed it, but it was looking at how, the nuclear family and neoliberalism really breaks down the value of community, and it just individual like centers the focus and centers the focus very, very much on like just a very nuclear family. And that's why we have like the growth of suburban community. It was related to like an urban planning. The article was kind of centered around urban planning, but it was basically saying how like suburban communities are built that way. Like a single family home is meant to do exactly that, accommodate a single mm-hmm. family, the nuclear family. And that is like the idealized version of what we need to achieve, which that in of itself is rooted in this very hegemonic, heteronormative power structure. Mm-hmm. And it's really like how damaging it is for people who live in urban centers that are more accepting of and promote community. And, you know, whatever that may be, that's not saying that it's just like lineage through like blood relations or family, but however your community may look, it's like the value of that is so important and how that's being broken down in modern, like, I'm not just going to say American, like modern society mm-hmm. across the globe.
I see that. Yeah. Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. I was just going to, sorry, I'm sitting here contemplating because I was listening to what you said, Charmaine, and I thought about how I feel like, and I talk about this all the time when it comes to privileges, but I feel like people who have this binary view of normalcy often like pressure their views on others without recognizing their inherent privilege in society that they fit into normalcy, if that makes sense. And I definitely think being a cis, gender, hetero, like sexual woman, I've come to recognize a lot of my privileges. And what people fail to realize is just because you have privileges doesn't mean that you have to, because there's this narrative where like you put yourself in that position, right? Mm-hmm. Or it almost puts it on marginalized communities, right? Who don't mm-hmm. have the privileges, like almost an attempt to erase privilege without acknowledging the privilege. And I think that that is an important conversation that we all should have within ourselves of all of our privileges and what can we do with those privileges, right?
100% agree.
I think that goes into dismantling that mm-hmm. heteronormative, you know, toxic masculine narrative that everyone should do this and this with their life, right?
Yeah.
And be more careful with conversations that we have, you know, with each other, with ourselves, and recognize the power of those conversations. Like if you're sitting there asking your friend when they get married and when they having a baby, check yourself, because everyone's journey. Ooh, that sounded really like.
No, it's
so much, no, you, please.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Please do it, because, you know, check yourself. Like, why does it matter? Is it going to change mm-hmm. your life?
Thank you.
I've been with my boyfriend for 10 years, example. Why you're not married yet? Well, it's none of your business. I'm happy the way it is. Like, if I wouldn't get married, I will. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So I completely understand that. So mm-hmm. again, that takes it back to where I was saying about expectations from different people and like how the way you should live. Oh, you lived with this person for 3 years. Why don't you get married? Or why don't you have kids? Well, I don't want to have kids. I don't want to get married. I'm fine the way it is. Things are right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah.
And I really...
Yes,
love that.
Let it go.
Let it go. And I love what you said about normalcy earlier, Roy, where it's like, your normal is what is normal to you, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important, because I am so guilty of this even to this day. Like I've tried to take the word normal out of my vocabulary, and I will continue to work on that, but it's like, because normal is what is like socialized on us. So it's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, oh, you've been by this age, you need to get married. By this age, you need mm-hmm. to have kids. Oh, you've been married for this long, why don't you have kids? This is a conversation I have, which, like, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to center myself in this conversation, but you said it just reminded me, like, this is a conversation I have with, I'm not joking when I tell you, every single day of my life, somebody asked me that. Yeah. And it is exhausting.
It really is.
Exhausting. And it's
especially in your culture and my culture, it's the same thing. It's like you get married and like 2 days later, oh, are you pregnant yet? You know, it's like, well, calm down.
Literally.
People, I was just gonna say, I'm going through the same thing with people. If one more person asks me when I'm freaking getting married, I'm be like, give me some money. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But it's true though. But it's very like, Ricky and I, we talk about this a lot too, where it's like, it's very much looking at, how does this affect you? If you want to ask somebody this question that you know, even if it is a close friend, if they are getting married, moving on in their relationship, buying a house, having a baby, and they care about you, they will tell you. Or even if they can, maybe they want to just wait to tell you, they will tell you. You do not need to ask somebody. And it's like, it's because these questions are so socialized, we feel like almost like you said it, Ricky, a privilege and an obligation to ask people where they fall in this scale of where we are socialized to be in life. And that is so problematic.
Yeah. You know what's funny too about all this? Because people will ask, you know, straight couples when they're getting married, but I've never been asked by a straight person when I'm getting married to mine.
It's so interesting. You know?
So yeah. It's like, there's no normal to this. As you say, like, take that normalcy out of that whole conversation. It's like, that, why do you feel the need to ask somebody who's normal to you, which is a straight person, girl and a guy, to get married, but you don't think it's normal to ask a guy and a guy to get married? So
or when they're having just, kids too.
Or, right, kid exactly. Too. Are you going to adopt? I'm like, well, it doesn't matter if I'm going to adopt or not adopt. But just you have to think about it the same way as you're asking that straight couple. Because it's not cool to ask anybody any questions that is related to their relationship unless they come ask you or talk to you about it. Like, if I'm the one who I'm talking to you, Ricky, and I'm like, hey, Ricky, I've been with my boyfriend for 6 years now, and we have not even talked about marriage. What do you think? That's when you, I'm asking for your opinion. You're not laying it on me and asking me all this, because, you know, that's what I would tell you. Like, because that would be great for me to get that insight, you know, for a third party, whatever. But for somebody asking me all these personal questions, it's like, I'm not going to answer you. And you don't need to know. As long as you see me happy, that's all that matters, you know?
Yeah. And sorry, Ricky, did I cut you off?
No, I was just going to say what Roy just said about, like, the importance for the individual to recognize their positionality when they are asking or when they are inquiring. Like, if someone close to me is, who knows me, and my boyfriend is like, hey, so what's up? What's going on? Like, hey, like, just let us know. We're ready. We're so excited. That's very different than Joe Blow.
Totally.
Sorry, I don't know. Black people love saying Joe Blow. I don't know if it's a black people thing. But when Joe Blow is asking me on the street, hey, I've been seeing you for 3 years. Where your ring at? Where your baby at? Time's ticking. That's very different.
Oh, the totally constantly different. Ticking one just makes me want to get violent. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, I do not condone violence, but it will bring out the Leo and all the fire in me. But I think that's such an important conversation. And it's like the amount of self-reflection that needs to happen on so many levels in our society collectively. And I think this also connects to a kind of like contested point that I'm going to bring up, with the trans community. And I hear this a lot in conversations and broader conversations with the trans community, where it's like, people feel the need to ask people that are trans where they are in their transition. And I think that is so, like, again, unless somebody has shared certain things with you, unless you are a certain level of closeness with them, where they can turn around and be like, that's none of your damn business. Like, that's fine. But it's like, I have heard this on so many, and when I tell you, like, on like news levels, on like in theoretical settings, like when we're discussing theory in classrooms, in like social settings, and I always feel the same amount of uncomfortable, where I'm just like, it is none of your business where somebody is on their transition. If they say that they are a trans person, that's it. There's no more to the conversation. They don't have to prove to you that they are a trans person.
Well, I'm gonna actually tell you something. It's funny you mentioned that, because I feel like people who are asking those kind of questions are very curious, because they don't know or understand. A lot of people don't know or understand. Sometimes I don't know or understand, you know, seeing a trans person, because we're all still learning about all these things, right? And, you know, it's more educational to me. But if you are that really curious about knowing what is trans, do your homework. Don't ask people. You know, unless you have a close friend who is going through that change, that's fine. You know, you can actually talk about it, or she will talk to you about it. But if you really don't understand it at all, and you see somebody trans that you really don't know yet or well, and to ask that question, that might be very offensive to that person, or might not be. It might be actually like educational to talk about it, right? But you're right. You know, it's like, it's a 50-50 here, you know, because sometimes I'm so curious. I'm like, so do you want me to call you he, a she? Or I'll ask somebody who knows that person, because I don't want to offend that person. So it's really challenging sometimes to really figure out what it is that, you know, because I just sometimes I don't know. Like, a lot of people ask me a question. So do you want me to call you he or she? Now, This is very first before, like a long time ago. Even my friends, when they call, like my gay friends, we call me, oh, she. I'm like, please don't do that because I'm not a she, I'm a he, right?
Right.
Because the world is so changing and our eyes are so open on so many different mm-hmm. things now. At this point, because I know who I am as a person, I don't care what you call me, he or she, whatever. Just like whatever you see me as, call me. But I like to go by he because I'm
your
a he.
Preferred pronouns are he. Yeah, right. I think that's important. And I appreciate you saying that, Roy, because I think you're right. I think that there is a level of curiosity that it is important to explore. I think what I was saying it was more in terms of like every time I've heard those people ask those questions, mm-hmm. it is to kind of like, I think to be disrespectful to a certain extent. Judging. Exactly. So it's like almost like a whole
different level.
Yeah. It's like the question is more like related to, pushing a certain rhetoric of what mm-hmm. they believe trans people should be, or like right. putting this larger, especially when I hear it on like news media and stuff, when it's already like such a large platform, it's like mm-hmm. pushing what trans, like it's pushing this narrative of what trans people should look like. And that's how, like they have to be this certain version of trans, and that's how, when they deserve rights, when totally. Like, that yeah. is like yeah. another issue, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They deserve every single right, like every single human being on this planet. My blood boils that we have to fight for our fucking rights. Excuse my French, but like I have to go there. But if you're trans, that's your right to be trans. That's who you are. Nobody else on this earth can tell you not. I'm sorry, I'm the only, I have a small voice, but I wish that voice can really grow to a lot of bigger and bigger and bigger group, because we're human beings, as I said, and we all deserve to be treated the same exact yeah. way like everybody else. No religion, no political bullshit should be affecting this human right. You know what yeah, I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And I, as you said, Charmaine, to your point, which is totally true, there's a line to cross between you could tell if you're judging somebody, or you could tell if you're curious because you don't want to disrespect that person yes. that is in front yes. of you. Yes. So there's two completely different topics. And we could talk about this for hours, I know, but you know, I know we don't have a lot of time. However, I totally agree with you. Like, so my perspective of trying to discover what that person's all about, like is all about, because I don't want to cross the line of disrespecting mm-hmm. that person by calling him he if he's not a he, or she if she's not a she, right?
Yes.
So that was my point of being curious. Otherwise,
yeah. Well, and preferred pronouns are important. Yeah. Absolutely.